Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Last night, we all watched, many of us watched what happened with the Ferguson jury came back with no indictment against Officer Darren Wilson. Much of the media has focused on the riot, quote-unquote, the riot that took place and the looting, rather than other things that happened on Ferguson and where most people were in the small crowd that was there, the police reaction. But really talking about what happened last night and how America, in many ways, is so divided on its view of what happened there and why it happened. We are joined here in studio by our dear colleague and friend, Dr. Lawrence Brown, also a co-host and substitute host here on The Mark Steiner Show, political activist, public health consultant, and assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University, from where we broadcast. We are joined by phone by Senator Maria. No, she's not here yet. Oh, she's not here yet. Okay, I'm sorry. Thought she
I'm
was
here.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Someone's shaking their head no across the glass. I didn't know what that meant. So Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal is with us, state senator for St. Louis County, 14th District, who's been a guest on the show many times and represents that district and has been on the ground when all this has been happening. Cameron Miles joins us by phone. He's director of Mentoring Teens in the Hood and has been a guest on the show on and off for the last 21 years. Glad to have you with us too, Cameron. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll get to the call that's been waiting for us to pick up in the midst of a moment. And write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. And you can also to tweet me at Mark Steiner. Get on our Facebook pages. 410-319-8888 is the number. So I think, Lawrence Brown, let me just start with you, if I might, since you're here with us in studio, that I think most people who were expecting what to come down last night were not shocked at what happened, though. I must say one of the first things that struck me listening to the prosecutor in Ferguson, St. Louis, was that I was wondering who was on trial. Was this a grand jury, or was this a trial taking place behind closed doors? And every reference seemed to be about the lies that black people tell, the truths that were not being told. Despite his beginning throwing his sympathies out to the Brown family.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, excuse me, that, you know, the way that the attorney, prosecuting attorney McCullough, brought out the case against Mike Brown. And what we're seeing, I think, in Ferguson now is what James Baldwin referred to as the fire next time. What Fannie Lou Hamer said, what she meant when she said, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." You're seeing a reaction to structural looting that has taken place for years and years and years in this country. Land theft, land dispossession, displacement of people from Kinloch out there in Missouri near Ferguson, the displacement to build that airport. You're talking about a community that often doesn't have, in this country, the opportunity because it's been structurally withheld due to forces like segregation. Mm-hmm. And so that's the reaction that I think we're seeing right now. And it's a reaction against white supremacist violence, which, again, is nothing new. The Shelley versus Kramer that overturned restrictive covenants, that comes out of St. Louis. Whether you talk about Wilmington, North Carolina, the insurrection there in 1898, the Atlanta race riots of 1906, Tulsa, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. where Black Wall Street was destroyed in 1921, Rosewood Massacre in 1923. America has a long history of white supremacist violence against black people where white people are not punished for what they do. And that's what we're seeing, I think, is the most important lesson of what we're looking at today.
So, and Senator, let me bring you in here before we turn to Cameron Miles. You were where were you last night when the announcement was taking place about this grand jury?
In a safe place.
I'm sorry. We do that one more time. I think our Skype was a little bumpy there.
One of the things that I have to be concerned about right now is my safety, and so I was in a safe place.
What do you mean you were concerned about your safety?
We've been receiving threats as senators. Especially the more vocal we have been, not only him, but also people on the ground from both sides. And so I was just concerned about being in a crowd not protected, and I have to make sure I put my safety first. One of my colleagues was approached at her house just the other day, and someone put a gun to her head.
What? An elected official?
Yes.
A black elected official had a gun put to her head.
Yes.
And were they punished?
The person, actually, my colleague stated to the person, do what you have to do, but you're not taking my keys. The person responded by smirking and then driving off. But she did not have her gun on herself, and she probably would have been killed if she did have her gun. I have also gotten phone calls from other people, including my family, telling me that my safety is of concern. And so I decided to be in a safe place, and I am obviously not disclosing that.
Wow. I'm going to come back to that. I'm going to bring Cameron in here for a minute. This is to hear more about what you're describing, Senator. I'm shocked. I mean, not shocked in the sense that I don't believe these things happen. I'm just shocked that it is happening. And it says a lot about the kind of terror that exists in places like Missouri, as you put it the other day, as your grandmother would say, the state. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Before I get to the phones, Cameron, I guess you were watching this last night as well.
Absolutely, Mark.
But you spend your heart and life and soul working with young people. And it's young people who fill those streets, and young people often fill these studios talking about where they are politically and socially and culturally in our land as guests on the show. But as a man who's devoted his life to those young people, talk about what you think was going on in the minds and hearts of these young people in that street last night. What was going through yours?
Well, first of all, Mark, I'd like to offer my condolences again to Michael Brown's family. Again, they have been disappointed and let down. But I want to say to all the young people that may be listening or family members, at no point should our young men confront the police. We want them, Mark, at the end of the day, to stay alive. If something happens, they must report it to someone they trust. The bigger question in all of this is how to improve relations between the police and community. And I think that what was going on in many of their minds was that we just do not trust the police. That's happening in Missouri, it's happening here in Baltimore, and it's happening in many places across this country. There is not a mutual respect between the police and young people. And I specifically work with young men and hear this on a weekly basis. Mr. Miles, they talk to us any kind of way, they humiliate us. You can't curse a young man and expect him to give you respect. So I think respect has to run both ways, and I think the people there don't feel that they've been respected, not with the judgment. And I just think we need to pay more attention to that. Community policing, body cameras more than anything, has to be brought to the front line now, especially. But we've had a litany of cases over and over and over again where if we had body cameras, maybe there would be a different outcome.
Let me go to the phone channel. We'll go right back to the senator because I want to pick up on what she said and where she left off at 410-319-8888. David, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi. I just wanted to make a real quick announcement to your listeners and give my condolences out to Michael Brown and his family, but all the victims of police brutality. There will also be a protest down at McKeldin Square, 100 East Pratt Street, Inner Harbor, today at 4 o'clock to show solidarity with the people of Ferguson and also say no to police brutality. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also understand there's another march in City Hall here in Baltimore tonight at 6 p.m. Taking place in Baltimore as well. We'll get more information about that. We'll let you all know as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Senator, I do want to come back to where we left off here. I mean, I really was taken aback by what you just said about your fearing for your own safety, because I know you've been standing up from the very beginning around this with these young people in the community and with the community and have been unafraid to speak your voice about the racism and systemic racism inside of Missouri and the political world. Could you talk a bit about what actually happened last night? Because when we watched on television, it seemed as if people were lining up at first in peaceful protest.
Yes.
And then what either were smoke bombs or tear gas were shot off by the police. Mm-hmm. And
it was tear gas.
So that so what was that sequence of events? Because it appeared as if nothing really was going on. All of a sudden we saw these tear gas bombs going off.
Well, let me just tell you what happened. I have several people who are on the ground constantly trying to calm down the crowd. And initially, everything that I saw and everything that was reported, the police officers had complete restraint. People were out in the street previously when we had been protesting. Police officers were completely against us being on the street. If you recall, there was a curfew, which was unconstitutional. There's a five-second rule, which was also ruled unconstitutional. And finally, last night, prior to the announcement of what the grand jury decided, everything was peaceful. People were just waiting to hear what was the final decision of the grand jury. Then when people heard about the grand jury, things got out of hand. And so because there was so much law enforcement that was at Ground Zero Number 2, which is the police department, folks ended up going to West Florissant, which was the original Ground Zero Number 1. And that's what you saw last night with all of the buildings that were burned, including the office where I taught classes twice a week with my students, people who are residents of Ferguson and in the surrounding area. I have to tell you that the people who have been peacefully protesting did not want to be a part of that. And I will tell you that as we continue to protest today, even this morning, we are going to be actively self-policing to ensure that people who are trying to incite the crowd from either end of the spectrum are thrown out of the crowd and get turned over to either the FBI or other law enforcement. But I have to tell you again, what you saw last night is a few people who were very, very angry. All of us are angry, but it's the way in which we treat the situation. Either we can positively deal with the situation that we're handed, or we can do something that is self-destructive. And any time that we are destructing our own communities, we're doing ourselves a disservice, and the entire world is looking at us right now.
Mathina James Brightfield joins us here in studio once again. She is Director of Community Education and Training with Turnaround Inc. Good to see you again, Mathina. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you have a thought from what you've been listening to?
I think one of the biggest things here, and I was having this conversation on my way into the station, is that this is indicative of a larger challenge that we experience within our communities, and it's going to go right into the next piece of our conversation as well, that we're looking at Lives Matter. They're nameless people and people whose faces we'll never know that take lives of young people on a regular basis that we don't ever get a chance to prosecute. We never get a chance to hold them accountable for the crimes that they've committed. So how do we create, how do we implement, and how do we stand for the lives of value of individuals who are innocent of crime and or should be punished for a crime that they've committed in a just and equitable way? That's one of the things that is churning my soul today.
I was saying to Lawrence Brown before we went on the air that in some ways, is being the age that I am, mm-hmm. this period of time we live in at this moment, since the election of Barack Obama, feels in some weird, strange, and twisted way like 1965 and 1966 to me, when the back of segregation in America was broken, when we began to enter a period where white terrorism against black citizens of the South was being crushed. I mean, mm-hmm. literal everyday terrorism mm-hmm. was being crushed. And if people understand the difference between what's happening now and then, if you lived in the South during the 50s and 60s and even earlier, I mean terrorism mm-hmm. That was taking place on a daily basis to keep an entire people subjugated. And that exploded and opened a new world in America. And there was a whole body of people at that point who were saying, we're tired, enough is enough. We don't want to wait for the rest of the stuff to change. That's changed now. And the contradictions of race, it seems to me, in some ways, have exploded onto the scene in America since the election of Barack Obama, not because of the man, but because a black man was sitting in the White House and what all that symbolized both for hope and for terror in this country in some parts. And that we're really seeing a really political, cultural, social explosion at the moment in this country. And I think that it's built around the Cosby accusations of race and who he represented to America and to white America. It's built around what's happening in Ferguson and all the kind of contradictions we're seeing across America, not just Ferguson, but with young black people being arrested and killed and being put in prisons across this country for nonviolent crimes, and all those contradictions that are erupting. And Lawrence, has, before I went on the air, that's what I posited to you, because I really think we are in a very deep historical moment, mm-hmm. as we were those 50 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, for young people, though, this is the first time that they're coming to this moment of realization. First, it was George Zimmerman getting off. Now it's Darren right. Wilson getting off. And so it's like, well, wait a minute. All of this post-racial hope that might have been embodied in Obama has totally been repudiated. And so for them, it's a moment of awakening, and it's contributing to this what we're seeing. You know, here in Baltimore in the past 8 years, Baltimore police have shot and killed 56 people. And only one police has been indicted here in Baltimore City. We're talking about Tyrone West. We're talking about Anthony Anderson. We're talking about the multiple victims of police violence, and the police never get charged. The Baltimore Sun, their report, undue force. $5.7 million has been paid out in settlements since 2011. So this is a widespread epidemic of killer cops that target and shoot black youth in particular disproportionately. And even as the senator is sitting in an undisclosed location, it's not just young black males. It's also black women, Marlene Pinnock, Renisha McBride, the four little girls in Alabama. This terrorism is against black people as a whole. And that's the moment that we're in. While people are trying to sort of maintain and constrain black response to this, where's the outrage and the wherewithal to constrain white killing of black children? That's what I want to hear. I'm tired of people telling us how we should respond and constrain ourselves when this system is running wild on our children.
Senator, I understand you want to jump in here. Please do, then we'll go to Cameron.
Yeah, go ahead. You want me to wait, Mark?
Let me just jump to the senator, then we'll go to Cameron.
Okay.
You know, I think you're so right. And one of the things that I am working on right now is my law enforcement omnibus bill, where we are going to attempt to make several changes in our statute. This is a wonderful opportunity for young people to educate themselves on the legal process, just the legislative process at all. And some say that there is a disconnect between young people wanting to get involved in politics, but some of the ideas that I have in my omnibus bill deals with hog tying. I mean, I had constituents who were hog tied, making sure when there is a state of emergency, there is a third party entity like Amnesty International or the ACLU to ensure that we have our constitutional, civil, and human rights respected. These are just elementary things that need to be identified in our statutes. But as well, we don't want to fund unaccredited police departments, nor do we want to fund police departments that refuse to wear audio and video technology while officers are on duty. And also, it holds the governor to a higher standard when he does do a state of emergency. Our governor has been absolutely reckless in every decision that he yep. has made, verbally and otherwise. And so I'm trying to put some teeth into the definition of what excessive force is, deadly force, so that our statutes aren't as broad, so we do not have a Darren Wilson who just gets to go home free without having any accountability.
Cameron, you want to take us to break with a thought? I know that the senator has to leave us in a few minutes, but I wanted her to get her voice in here before we had to go to break. Cameron?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Mark, that in reference to Dr. Brown's statistics that he laid out so eloquently, every night, Mark, on Channel 2, Channel 11, Channel 13, and most of the mass media outlets, young people, especially people of color, are depicted in a very, very negative form. You know, we're shown by being covered up by a sheet. Our pictures are wanted for this and for that. And I think that over the years, over and over, black males especially, but black people being depicted in a negative light, it permeates people's subconscious minds, and it causes them to think negatively about us. I can still, Mark, walk downtown and pass a woman of a different race, a white woman, and just as recently as last week, realize and see her clutch her bag. I would come to her defense, Mark, if she was in trouble, or anybody else.
I know you would.
But I still think that mindset exists where I'm afraid. I'm afraid of the black man. He's going to hurt me, because all we get predominantly are the negative stories across mass media outlets across this country.
We have to take a very brief break, and I do want to thank State Senator Mary Chappelle Nadal for joining us once again from St. Louis County. And Senator, please stay safe, and you know that if you have an outlet here in the media, that your story is always open here, and that whatever we can do to protect your being from this perspective, we will.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Senator. Always good to talk to you. Be
you
safe.
Too.
Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal, who obviously feels that she needs to be in hiding because of what's going on, what happened to her colleague, that shows you how deep those tensions are. I really have not heard of a situation like that directly involving somebody mm-hmm. who is a black elected official in mm-hmm. this country since my days in the civil rights movement in the 60s. That is pretty shocking, what the story she has just told us here, that I have not seen on any other media since. We'll come back with Dr. Lawrence Brown, Mathena, James Brightful, and Cameron Miles here in just a moment. Take a brief break. We're on our way to Rebake. We are hearing Don't Go to Strangers by the great Etta Jones, who was born on this day in Aiken, South Carolina. We'll be right back.
All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free.
So it was like the officer's pulling him inside the car. He's trying to pull away. And at no time the officer said that he was going to do anything until he pulled out his...
Build your dreams to the stars above. But when you need someone true to love.
Welcome back. I apologize. I did not look at my producer's notes before we went to break. And we went out with Be Free by J. Cole in his tribute to Michael Brown. So that's what we went out with. And we are coming back with the great Etta Jones. So I just changed that phrase, you know, with music we're hearing. And we are here with Dr. Lawrence Brown. And in our studio, along with Mathena James Brightful, who's in our studio as well, and Cameron Miles joining us by phone, and we're going to get your calls at 410-319-8888. And I asked this question during the break because one of the reasons that Mathena was coming in today mm-hmm. was because we were originally going to talk about Bill Cosby and what's happening with that in America, and these interesting articles have been written lately about that. I was talking to Lawrence about before we went on the air about how one of the reasons that Bill Cosby's been protected, one person hypothesizes, is all these years is because he makes white America feel comfortable about their own feelings and views of the black world, and because of patriarchy, as Lawrence Brown chimed in. And I asked the question during break, and Mathena responded when I asked the question, how do you make the connection, or can you make a connection between, which I was trying to do earlier when I say we're in this great historic moment, I think, around race. And also I think misogyny is coming to the fore over and over because you're seeing so many people across this country, campuses and uproars over the attacks on women on campuses by men, fraternities being shut down at universities. Like in Virginia, they've been shut down. The president of Lincoln University resigned. I just read that this morning in the paper. He resigned because of the uproar of his comments to the women at the convocation. So, but in some ways, I don't think it's a stretch to say these things are connected. Mathena?
It isn't a stretch. Again, it highlights, one, the look of how lives matter, in particular black lives matter across America, how the lives of women matter. And it also looks at how we pinpoint one person and say, this person, what not, why about this person? When they're behind that person, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people across America committing very similar, if not the exact same, crimes against people, against women, against young people. And so then when we pinpoint that and we focus on that attention, and let's say we do get that person arrested. Let's say we do get that one person, then we allow it to say, yes, we did something. Well, what have you really done when it's just that one person that you happen to highlight, when, again, there's hundreds of thousands that you're not focusing on, that we're not going after, that we're not saying to the victims of those individuals that you matter, you are of value, we care about what happened to you as well. And how can we support you in this process?
So on our way back to the phones here, I mean, and we're going to go to Dave and then Michael, our next two callers up right away here. But I don't mean to sound Pollyannish. I don't mean it that way at all. But in some ways, whenever we reach crucibles like this in our personal lives or in our culture or in places like the United States, the other side of that is that the opening of a wound can lead to its healing. That leads to some change that is positive, that sometimes we can't see because they're in the midst of all the horror of the moment. And I Cameron and then Lawrence, all right? Cameron?
At Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood, we want to make sure that we teach our young men to respect everybody, but to especially respect women. Our women cannot be looked upon as a piece of meat. And, you know, with UVA and all the other places where negative and ridiculous, terrible things are happening against women, we have to speak truth to power. So that's what we're doing in Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. I don't want any of our young men hitting a young lady. No one should be putting their hands on anybody, but especially our young men should not be hitting a young lady because they have a disagreement, because they don't do something that the young man told them to do. That's our focus at Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood regarding that.
You know, Mark, I think you're right. Frederick Douglass said, without struggle, there is no progress. So the conflict, the tension actually forces people to grow because it's calling into question the status quo. It's calling into question those systems and ideologies that are so deeply embedded that they're rarely called into question. So we live in an anti-black, anti-indigenous people, patriarchal capitalist society. And these issues are causing us to confront the lack of indictment on Derrick Wilson's, causing us to confront anti-black racism, the accusations against Bill Cosby's, causing us to confront patriarchy. Because part of the reason he was able to get away from it was the image of Cliff Huxtable, the patriarchal father that white America and black America in many ways loved. And so this image of this patriarch, you know, is one that's so deeply ingrained in our Judeo-Christian values and systems and religious thought that we rarely question the father. We rarely prosecute the father. You know, the father is viewed as very authoritarian, as almost one who isn't questioned in the vein that we view a Jehovah or the Lord God in our Judeo-Christian tradition. And so a lot of those things are being called into question right now because of struggles against patriarchy, struggles against racism. And I think that it's a beautiful moment. It's a beautiful moment to realize, as Margaret Walker said, let a new earth be born. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Because that's what's coming out of the conflict. That's what's coming out of the tension, is growth because of the struggle. And people are pushing back against the status quo, pushing back against ideologies that maybe have been harmful to us all along.
Let me open the phone to you. Unless anybody wants to jump in, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Dave on line 3.
Hey, Mark, it's an old man, veteran of the civil rights and peace movement. I like to think of the creative side of militant nonviolence and tactics such as disruption and confrontation of officials and the media here in Baltimore, particularly the bad media, the boycotts that could be done, and follow the money, those type of actions that we had fun with back in my day. I don't think young people should be afraid of jail either, because it's a very much of a learning experience. You meet some great people, and where do you draw the line, though, Mark? A Molotov cocktail, destruction of property? I mean, maybe some property has no right to exist.
Well, let's talk a minute about this before we turn to Michael on line one, before we get to his call, and talk about this. This is what most of the media is focusing on right now. Most of the media is focusing on the destruction of private property in Ferguson. I was on Facebook looking at some of my young friends and family and their discussions back and forth around this issue last night and this morning. And the question of those who were in that crowd who were confronting the police demanding we have a right to stand here and be here, that was the negotiation we had. And the police not allowing that to happen, watching the policeman tell the woman they had to leave or be arrested, while another set of people were began to kind of burn cars and loot. So and break into stores. So let's talk about these contradictions, and the media focusing on property, but really not questioning what happens to lives like the life of Michael Brown.
One of the things that it makes me think of, even as we talk about the connection between looking at lives, particularly black lives in the 50s and 60s and even before then, when we were viewed as property even then, they put more attention and focus on us. So it doesn't shift my attention. It doesn't surprise me that they're putting more attention and focus on the value of a building than the value of the lives of the people in the street who are demanding justice for the lives of someone that they cared about and loved about, that they see representing their own family members and themselves. And so whenever media shifts their attention to something, it always makes me wonder, what is it that they don't want us looking at? Why are you showing me a burning building? Why aren't you showing me the people in the street more than a burning building? I'm not saying I'm justifying destruction of property, not at all. But what I am saying is, what is it that you're trying to distract us from that you put more attention on that than you do on the people? Because I always believe that people are much more valuable than a building or a piece of property.
And I totally agree with what she just said, but I think that the people who own the buildings, the real estate magnates, the big power brokers, are not people of color. Now, I'm not saying there are no people of color that mass a great deal of money, but the masses of those who control and call the shots and, if you will, control the media and what gets out and what doesn't are not people of color. So they are going to dictate what gets out and what doesn't. Watch the news on any evening. How many positive stories get out about black males and black women? There are more negative things that come out in the news and the media than there are positive things.
And for me, I look at, you know, structural looting. You know, people want to focus on looting and rioting, but they don't want to focus on white supremacist violence that's pervasive and prevalent in our society. They don't want to focus on structural looting that was brilliantly summarized in Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Case for Reparations. All of those New Deal policies that plundered trillions of dollars of wealth out of black communities, segregated people, black people, into inner city ghettos while subsidizing suburbs in the United States, and allowing whites to accumulate wealth while black people were losing the ability to obtain wealth because we were redlined, because we were restricted from owning homes in a fair and just way. And so even Dr. King, a major proponent of nonviolence, doesn't subscribe to this general sort of knee-jerk reaction against rioting. He explains it. He understands in his speech, A New Direction, that he said, in summing up the general causes of riots, we would have to say that the white power structure is still seeking to keep the walls of segregation and inequality substantially intact. And so that's Dr. King understanding that there's a prelude, there's a precursor, there's a pretext for what we're seeing. And it's the structural forces in society, the structural violence, the structural looting that hurts and harms and causes so much of what we're seeing.
And also going back to the other thing Dave said, let me just say that I watched the young people and movements in Ferguson preparing for this week. They were all preparing for what Dave was describing as militant nonviolence. They were all preparing to lie down in the street with chalk marks laying around them. Black, white, Latino, mostly young people out there together to say no to all of this. Mm-hmm. And so that was what was going on. And as someone posited today before we went on the air, Mark was struck by the complete disregard of all the media police and officials have for protesters they don't consider peaceful. And watching this, I think, of Darren Wilson and of Zimmerman, I highlighted the wrong piece. But let me what he basically said was watching the cars being overturned, mm-hmm. and being burned. Question, who was really doing that? Mm-hmm. Where was that coming from? It certainly wasn't from the mass of people who were there to nonviolently resist and protest this lack of indictment. And so I think there are all kinds of questions like that that have to be raised and what we focus on. And I think that a lot of people were into this nonviolence who were part of that. They were not into into what was happening. And you saw young people before in Ferguson standing in front of stores going, this is not what we're doing, and stopping people from going into the stores because it dilutes the message.
But even if it was.
But even if it was.
Those protesters. I mean, again, in America, we don't study history. The 12th Street riot in Detroit in 1967. The Watts Rebellion in 1965, the response against the Rodney King verdict in the early 90s, Ferguson now, the response is the Kinder box, the match is police brutality, but there's a underlying gunpowder, a keg of gunpowder that's been sitting beneath the surface the whole time, and all the police brutality and murder is doing is throwing a match on the keg of gunpowder. And that's what all of the reports say, the Kerner Commission, the National Commission on Urban Problems. When you look at the people that have gone to do the research after the riots and the rebellions and uprisings, the Holy Week uprising after the assassination of Dr. King in 1968, when you look at those reports, they talk about these strident injustices, the systematic injustices that exist as the keg of gunpowder sitting beneath the surface, and all you need is something like the death of a Mike Brown to set it off.
But will the death of Mike Brown be remembered, or will the attention be turned away to all the violence that is taking place? And what will happen today and in the days to come? The focus has got to be, in my humble opinion, that we have to focus on the fact that the prosecutor did not give instructions. He did a data dump. We have to remember that the standard was low. We have to remember that the grand jury members are not attorneys. They needed instructions and guidance. And from my study, the grand jury is more like a classroom than a courtroom. There's a pattern of young black men being killed by white police officers. And what do young people, how do they see that? But I don't see how the looting and the burning is going to help us to get to a positive answer so that Mike Brown's life and all the other names that Dr. Brown shared earlier in this conversation are not forgotten.
But the looting and the rioting are actually showing us how young people view it.
Dies, we've lost too many people to violence, and it has to stop. Everybody's life means something. All of us, Dr. Brown, Mark Steiner, the other black queen that is with us this morning, everybody has gifts and has talents, but we don't get to see or realize those if people's lives are taken away nonsensically.
Let me open the phones here, if I might. 410-319-8880. I do want to read this email that came in. There's a quote that I read from this morning. I'm reading a lot of papers this morning from the Jewish Daily Forum that was very interesting from its editor. 410-319-8888. Michael, line one, you're on the air. Line one.
Hey guys. Mike Scott.
Hey, Mike. How are you, man?
Good, man. What a mouthful to talk about. But I think the notion that we need to change the narrative because – yeah, the standards and the policies are low and they're off and they're wrong, but they follow, hearts and minds, and what changes those are stories. I mean, at the end of the day, the legal issues turned on the word fear, right? Did he have a reasonable basis to fear, right? And so this talk about destruction of property, I mean, we got to remember that there are people, right? So Jelani Brown, Pastor Tracy Blackman, Buki, Bodice and Larry Fellows, who was some of the youngest and earliest on the ground there, along with brother from Baltimore, Alvin Herring, and the way Reverend Alvin Herring, and the way that the Cosby stuff ties in is brother Brown is absolutely right. We have this patriarchal discussion, and it was and for whatever he did in his personal life, the one thing that most folks celebrated was this image, right? So again, the storytelling. But we get lost in the story, and if we're debating tactics of nonviolence versus violence, and most of us support nonviolence, but if we're debating the tactics and we're forgetting the humanity of people, and we're forgetting the larger narrative and the stories that need to be told to kind of change that, because at the end of the day, what's driving this is how we think about each other, how we think about you know, race in this country, and those things that maybe the minority of your thoughts, even not the minority of people, but the minority of your thoughts or minority of the people that were protesting are going to completely shift this narrative from what it needs to be, which is that we have a broken system, that our hearts and minds are not in alignment, and therefore our policies aren't in alignment. And as long as we think that black lives are different and adjudicated and weighed differently, and we have these unconscious biases that are unexamined, you know, we're not getting at the heart of the matter. So I'm going to advocate for more storytelling and constant organizing.
I second that, Michael Scott, more organizing and more storytelling. I do think that we're reaching a critical mass of people in America that and do want to deal with this issue of race and class in our country and where it's taking us. And maybe I'm being naive, but I believe that. And Anne wrote in, she said, Mark, we've been through a lot of protesting since our early days of liberal education. You as an activist and me usually as more of a passive supporting role. I'm so confused and concerned with this angry crowd in Ferguson. Has nothing changed? Where do we go from here? And will the violence ever stop? I don't, and I'll stop there. But I think that is, and I'm reading on Facebook last night from a number of people who are making these comments who did not agree with the decision, but are, and mostly from the non-African-American world, who are freaked out and point to the violence taking place and what that violence means. We've addressed that a lot, but I just think that's a disconnect that I think that's important for us to bridge, to say this. We have to understand how to look at this with different eyes.
And that's been my point, to say, why are we freaked out about the rioting in Ferguson but not the race riots that helped create a lot of the context that we're seeing, that looted, you know, the white supremacist violence, the mob violence from the Klan to the killer cops, that have allowed these conditions to fester and create the response that we're seeing in a Ferguson in 2014. We're freaked out by one, but we don't even recognize the Tulsa, Oklahoma's, the Rosewood, Florida's, the Wilmington, North Carolina's, the Hayti, North Carolina's of the world. And so if we're going to be freaked out by one, we need to be freaked out about it all. The land dispossession of Native Americans. We need to be freaked out about the slave trade from Africa that stole 12 million people and displaced them all around the New World. Let's be freaked out about it all, because that's the structural violence and systemic violence that has caused the conditions that we see today.
And let me just say, tomorrow, Mathania, we want to jump in there, Michael, right to the phones here, that tomorrow you'll be hearing a Native American response to both Thanksgiving, but also what happened in Ferguson. They're going to be joining us for a conversation about that tomorrow to hear that perspective. You were going to say what,
Mathania? Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Can Dr. Brown is making some excellent points. I think that at some point the discussion needs to move towards the school system. Too much of what he is sharing today, I know about, you know about, he knows about, but our young people have no clue. And I hope that the school system at some point would consider infusing within their structure day, their learning day, to be able to start taking pieces of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and other incidents, so that young people understand their history, not his story, but their history, so that these things won't continue to happen. And when they do happen, our young people, who are our future, they understand it.
I agree completely. And we've been having these discussions that came up at our town meeting the other night. We have discussions now about how to get this into young people. I had a discussion last night with Paul Rucker, an artist dealing with this stuff about racism in the past and the present. How do we get this conversation going with young people? I think this is critical for the future where we are. Mathana, we have like 6 minutes left or so, and we have a dozen callers, and I want to try to get to as many as I can, but Mathana.
I'll make this quick. I think what our young people are telling us and what we see in Ferguson, what we've seen around the world, truthfully, over the last few years with uprisings and things that our young people are saying, is they're saying they're not waiting. They're no longer waiting and saying, okay, I'm fine with being the future and that someday I get to say or do something. They are demanding their voice be heard right now, today. And if we aren't supporting them, I know Cameron does, I know Dr. Brown does, I know we do, but if we don't, as a mass of people, support their voice and give them a platform to showcase, because
right,
they're no longer afraid
right
of anything. They are demanding their voice. And so I think they're saying that they're now. They're no longer the future, not just the future. They're today.
Let's me go to the phones here. And I've reminded people also, that's the same thing that those of us in our 60s now who are in our 18s and 20s and 60s were saying the same thing as some people are saying in Ferguson today. Listen to us. 410-319-8888. Sam in Mount Washington, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Sam.
I was listening to something Van Jones was talking about this morning where he said he noticed something very different about the crowd, that the crowd had more of this anonymous mass, that there was a, sort of an Occupy movement injected into the crowd.
Yep.
And that there seemed to be an orchestration to the arson that was going on amongst the peaceful protesters, and that perhaps this thing was not totally in control of the peaceful protesters, that perhaps it was, you know, as they keep putting outside agitators, but perhaps that those outside agitators aren't of the Ferguson community, but are of a different level of discourse that's going on in the world, as opposed to just Ferguson.
I think Sam, that all those contradictions that you describe were in the midst of all that happened in Ferguson. I think the Occupy movement did set something off in this country, which is why you see so many of the Occupy masks that were in Ferguson. People lived there and people who weren't there. And I think that's true. I think that that's the dynamic tension in these forces. And we don't know if they were from the outside or not. But, of course, you know, in Mississippi and Alabama, they call us outside agitators. Mm-hmm. Right? Bob Moses was an outside agitator. Marion Barry was an outside agitator. Diana Nash was an outside agitator. So, I mean, that's always been the case. I think you raise a really important point, Sam, that we need to wrestle with. I should turn to the three of you or get one more caller in here before we run out of time. What you all want to do? Get another caller in? Let's go to Corey in Baltimore. You're on the air. Hi, Corey. You're on the air. We only have a couple of minutes left.
All righty. I hear you. Thank you for taking me, Mark. I appreciate it. So I just had a couple of comments for the listening audience. It sounds like at the end of the day, we have a question that has to be answered, and that is, why does it take oftentimes issues such as this for our voice to be heard? The point that I want to make is, when it comes to certain societal issues, when there are multiple races involved, we get progress, we get forward momentum, we get change. It sounds like in this particular instance, as it relates to race, anything that is solely motivated by the black people, we unfortunately don't get heard. If we do, we're often taken out of context, and then it just oftentimes muddles the overall goal. Right. So my question and my charge would be for other people, other nations, other races to stand with us, other causes to stand with us and fight this change. That's the only way that it's going to happen.
Corey, I'm sorry, we're really literally out of time, and we have time for last comments or no? Very quick final thoughts from you, because I agree with you, Corey, and I think that's what has to happen in America, and I think that one-third of white America that is trying to see the world in different lenses some of our jobs, is to bring that voice in so they can understand more deeply what's going on in America, so they can become the force for change in this country and unite with other people in this country to do that. Very quickly,
my only final thought on this is, stop waiting. This is not the time to wait for things to happen. This is the time to make things happen.
Amen. Lawrence, very quickly.
Amen.
Cameron, very quickly.
In 1996, I started a mentoring program with 5 young men. Everybody in every community needs to step up and do something. Let's do more community policing and stop waiting on legislative leaders and others to make something happen. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to your guests.
Always thank you, Cameron Miles, Director of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. Mathina James Brightful, Director of Community Education and Training with Turnaround Inc. Great to have you back in the studio. Hope you feel better.
Thank you.
And my good friend, Dr. Lawrence Brown, thank you so much for being here in the studio once again.
Always a pleasure.
And we are going out with a little bit of Prince here on the Mark Steiner Show on our way out. And don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by our weekly conversation, Soundbites. Stay with us. And next Monday, we're coming back to this in a bigger way after the holiday, maybe 2-hour special. We're working on some ideas now to bring this up, ranging discussion on all this with people from here and across the country. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Which one of us is right?